All right, so welcome back to the Bearable Project. This is a Patreon exclusive, at least on the video side. A discussion came up the other day, and Christy and I probably exchanged a message. I exchanged a message. I shouldn't. This is a one-way conversation most often. I message her stuff all the time, and this time it was in regards to a post that came through about arrow calls, and it was at a World Archery event, actually in Asia, not in America. But I had posted it in the Patreon or in the subscribers group, and the answers were just all over the place. And I think when it comes to, I think a lot of the rule stuff is there's a disconnect with the way the rules work. And it was that way for me some time ago. I'm not gonna lie. Like even my interpretation of the way the rules are, I was like I learned some things in conversation with Christy. And so what ultimately ended up happening, we start talking about it more and more. And then I made this post, and I'll share my screen and show you guys the actual picture. And shout out to the archer from World Archery Asia that had posted this. There was a lot of confusion in regards to how to make this arrow call. And to be fair, I don't think this picture is a fair representation of how you're gonna make a call, but I'll share this so you guys can see it. And we'll go from there. But so Christy and I started talking about the rules, and then we started talking about arrow calls and proper etiquette and the way to go about the whole process. So we're like, hey, let's just record an episode and talk about it. And really kind of let's explain like target etiquette, how it's supposed to work. We'll talk about the verbiage, talk about how we go about this process, and what judges do also, because let's be fair, like we're looking at one, not even a, really, we're not looking at an angle that a judge would use from that picture at all. So, welcome back to Barrel Project, Christy.
Thank you.
So let's get into it. Where would you like to start? Because you are the professional here in regards to being a judge for USA Archery and World.
Yeah, so I'm a continental judge for World Archery Americas and a national judge with USA Archery for 9 years now. And one of the things that I see come up all the time in Facebook posts like this one is this frontal view image, right? And everyone's like, is it in or out? You know, it's like that's the big question. And everyone's got an opinion, and some people feel really strongly about how the arrow call should be done, based off of this frontal view. And the reality is that frontal views are extremely misleading. Arrow calls actually should not ever really be determined from a frontal view. But if you really watch archers when they're down at the bale scoring, it's one of the most common ways that archers call arrows. And when it's an obvious call, that's fine. If it's not a liner, right? If it's not questionable, is it next to this next scoring ring? No problem. But when we start getting close to that next scoring ring, obviously it's not the ideal way to call the arrow. So as judges, you know, we're trained that we're looking at arrows from two different angles. And those, you know, the position that we view them, first of all, our heads are supposed to be positioned parallel to the target. That's really important. If you see someone calling an arrow with their face out in front of the arrows, they're not calling it correctly. So they're supposed to be parallel to the target face. And we're supposed to be in a position where we can view as close to a right angle, like 90 degrees, with the arrow shaft as possible. So we're looking at the tangent to the circle, right? That's that line that touches a circle at a single point. And we're looking at both sides of it. So if you're not looking at an arrow like that when you have one that's so close or questionable, such as that example, then it's not being called correctly. Because as judges, the reason why we look at both sides is because there are times where you'll look from one angle and you can see separation. You know, you can see color, you can see that it's not touching the next scoring ring, but you look from the other angle and it clearly is. And when that happens, it's called to the higher score, you know, higher arrow value. So it doesn't have to be that both sides or both angles we look at have to be touching the line or touching the next scoring ring, just one. And if it's so questionable that we as judges can't, we're just not 100% sure, then the benefit of the doubt goes to the archer. So I think based on how this post was kind of written, and it's, I don't think English is a first language necessarily, so there was a little bit of confusion, I think, in translation there. It sounds like the target judge was called over by the team that, that's who that arrow belonged to, and that they called it a 10. And the other team wasn't happy about it. They called another judge over who happened to be the chair of judges, is what I assume. And they overruled the target judge, which obviously caused the commotion. And, the archers thought they were going into a tie shoot-off. And in fact, the other team just filed an appeal. And it was within their rights to do so. So it's hard because I think, I mean, some of our elite archers, when I'm judging, if they have a questionable arrow, you'll see them look at the arrow from those two angles.
Oh,
Like you'll
sure.
watch them do that, But, younger archers or newer archers that just don't have any judging background or don't have that experience, they're looking at frontal view all the time to call arrows. And so in that picture, you're right. You can see yellow. And in some people's minds, that means
That's
that
it. That's all they
that's
need.
it. Yeah, that's all they have to see. But that's actually kind of misleading too. I mean, there's some terms that people use, like, well, it's not breaking the line, so therefore it doesn't, get the higher arrow value. And the reality is it doesn't have to break a line. There's nowhere in the rules that says anything about breaking a line. All it has to do is touch the higher, scoring circle, right? And it's not even a line everywhere because we don't have lines between the white and black and the, black and blue. So it's not even necessarily about a line. It's the scoring ring itself that it has to touch. So.
And also it's that they don't look at it from both angles. They just take for granted, oh, I see yellow, it's out. And I'm not going to say that, especially in the youth side of things, but maybe even in the adult side, where people will just walk up and say, oh, I see yellow, it's out. And that could be a competitor if they're peer grouped or whatever is happening. And so, like, there's people out there like that. And the fact of the matter is that you, as an archer, one, you have a voice and you have an opinion on your arrow. And if you, once you get into those higher levels of competition, you want every single point. So, you're looking at it, if the person who is your arrow caller, and I think that's an important message for younger shooters and newer shooters. Make sure that if you have close arrows specifically, that you are taking the time to look at it from those two angles. Don't just assume because, hey, I see yellow. Don't let somebody else's opinion influence. Oh, well, they said this archer says it's out. That archer says it's out. Don't feel pressured into that. Give it a fair look. You're the one that's calling the arrows. Because a lot of times you'll see, especially on the youth side of things, archers walk up, oh, yeah, that's out, before even arrows are called, to try to influence what direction that goes. So make sure you don't do that. And I guess that maybe is a segue into, like, how, from a judge's aspect, do you feel like, how can we explain to new competitive shooters, view shooters, parents, maybe new coaches or coaches that don't have a lot of competitive experience? Because we'd be preaching to the choir somewhat with your more experienced shooters. How should we be approaching arrow calls from a shooting aspect? Like, what's the, let's just talk about it. Like, there's a close arrow call, and the person calling the arrow isn't not, I wouldn't say isn't quite sure, but makes the decision, but is unsure and then refers to the group. Can you talk through that situation and that scenario?
Yeah, so this is what I most commonly see with younger youth archers, newer ones coming in. They don't even actually pay attention to their arrow values a lot of the time because they've been assigned this role, whether that's the electronic scoring or paper scoring or, to watch the butterflies fly around because that happens too for that one archer that's supposed to be the observer and overseeing things. So the first thing I would say is, as an archer, it's really important that you're paying attention to your arrow values. And even if that means that you're in charge of scoring on, the tablet or the paper, that you're watching as the arrows are being called, you're verifying, you're that second verification step too, especially for your own arrows. I mean, that's huge. So sometimes what I see, so in chapter 17 of the rule book, where it's questions and disputes, right? That anytime there is a question about the value of an arrow, it's to be referred to as a judge. And so, or be referred to a judge. So when an archer has a disagreement, then they should automatically be raising their hand and calling a judge over. They do not need the permission from their other archers that are on their bail. Even if the three of the four archers all say that, nope, it's a nine. If that archer thinks it's a 10, they have a disagreement. They, are able to call a judge over to settle that disagreement. As a judge, when I come up to a bail, the first question I always ask is, well, I mean, first, how can I help you? But once they determine they want an arrow value called, I will ask if all the other arrows have been called on the bail.
Right.
That's
Why is
just a
that?
best practice. It's a best practice. It's not a rule. There's nothing that says, as a judge, we can't call an arrow value if they haven't, but we don't want to be getting our bodies in there trying to call an arrow and bump other arrows that haven't been called yet. So we like to, just have all the arrows called, and then we'll come back and we'll call that arrow that's in question. One of the things too, though, whenever I do encounter archers sometimes where I'm like, did you guys have a disagreement? I'll ask that question. And I ask that question sometimes because there are archers that just won't even try to call in there. They look at it and they're like, oh, yeah, I don't know. And then everyone else is like, okay, well, we'll just call a judge over. And so the reality is there needs to be a disagreement because in, all three or four archers on the bail could actually think it's the same arrow value, but they don't even try. So I like to, with, younger archers, try to encourage them to go through that process, feel empowered. Like you have a voice, like you said, you have a voice, you have an opinion in it. You should voice it. You should say it. So, I will encourage them to go through that process if they haven't yet. Sometimes I'm not needed. I can walk away because they've all agreed. They're like, well, yeah, I thought it was a 10. Yeah, I thought it was a 10. They all think it's a 10. They just weren't willing to speak up. So I will do that. And then if they do say, yeah, no, I think it's a 9, I think it's a 10, then I'm like, okay, great. Thank you. Let me come in and let me, resolve that. One of the big things, and this I think is a 14.2 maybe is the rule. Whatever the judge decides is final. That's a final decision when it comes to an arrow value. So there can't be another judge called in. You can't, argue with the judge about it. You've called the judge over, judge makes final decision when it comes to arrow values.
So how did that translate into that appeal then for this situation? How does that translate over then?
Yeah, that's a great question. Obviously, not being there, not knowing the full background and story, I'm not sure exactly where the COJ decided to come in and overrule. There is a cat like in archery, as judges, especially as a chair of judges, you do have the ability to overrule a decision if there was something that was done incorrectly by one of the judges on the
I
commission.
think that's where I was sort of leading to it is like, what's the just reason to request an appeal? Because you said so yourself, a judge's ruling is final. So you're not really correct me if I'm saying this wrong. You're not appealing the value, you're appealing the process of making the call. Does that sound right?
So I believe in this situation, the Kazakhstan, I think, was the team that actually probably filed the appeal against India's the decision. They were, I believe, filing an appeal against actually it's I'm trying to think what's the rule? 14. Yeah, it's like 14.1.3 and 14.1.4, I think, are the two different rules that refer to when a judge comes over to call the arrow, right, then that decision is final. It's a final decision or a final call. So I'm sure that's the rule that they referenced because there was an original call made and another judge came over and overruled it. That's the one ex like thing that a COJ can't overrule. Like they cannot overrule an arrow value call. They can overrule other mistakes that are made.
Got it.
So if something else was decided, I mean, I've heard some things such as, an archer shot three arrows in a match and one of the arrows didn't have the same color nock or fletching. And I've heard of, I've heard stories where judges have said, well, you can't get that arrow value. That arrow value is a miss now. That is not in the rules. That is an incorrect ruling, so then a COJ could come over and fix that right on the spot. Like they could change that ruling, even though a judge said that. They can't change a narrow value call though. So that is just one of those rules that it's existed for several years. There used to be the option for you could call a second judge. That did exist in the past, many, many, many years ago.
Okay.
But it's been gone for quite a while now. So that's a firm one in world archery, that there's no second arrow value calls. They're final.
Gotcha. Good. Do you feel like that if more archers were really educated on the process of how do I preface this conversation? If archers understood the process of making the arrow call, that we would have a lot less, "Hey, judge, come here." Like it, I feel like that's when we went through the comments of that specific post, there was so, I am going to say that 85% where I see yellow, it's out. A lot. And that's really what this episode is being geared toward. Like, listen, that's not the case. Learn to look at it from both ends. This was, it is an international competition. So like, this is the kind of the top 3% of competitions that you're going to see elite shooters at and whatnot. So, you know, even at that level, the judge, there's some miss, maybe we don't have all of the information in regards to that specific scenario, but those coaches, credit to those coaches or archers, like they knew what to say in order to have it reevaluated. And that's where, while we don't see, maybe a lot of us don't shoot that international level or whatever, but knowledge is power in this situation. You need to put your nose in the rule book and understand all of the calls, you know? So I don't know where I'm going with this. I'm kind of went off on tangent. I apologize. I guess it was really just a matter of the statement of like, you will need a judge a lot less often if you know the rules and how to implement them every tournament you go to, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you need to know the rules to be empowered, period, right? You can't advocate for yourself if you don't understand what you're advocating for. So
right.
I think, you know, knowing the rules is really key. I will say that arrow calling is actually harder than it looks. I think as someone that has done, you know, seminars, a lot of, you know, national level, you know, local level, national level seminars, I've done a continental seminar as well. That's always one of the pieces of the practical, like hands-on experience that we do as part of seminars and certifications. And you'd be surprised how many judges that, you know, haven't necessarily learned the proper way. Like it's a really key part of certification and getting that higher levels of judging certification, because they're calling it out farther, their heads are farther away, you know, from the bale. They're not getting in there, getting parallel to the target face. You know, you really just, to, in my opinion, as a judge, you know, when we are calling arrows, it's probably like single-handedly the most important thing that we do as a judge, right? I mean, obviously we're there, you know, to ensure fairness of play and all of that, but it is one of the most important jobs that we do. And it's what's actually going to gain respect and trust from the athletes, is how well we do that and how professional we are in the process. So I always highly recommend that every club have a judge, so that judge can take the time and work during pin shoots or whatever, right? Like use that as an opportunity to help athletes understand. I mean, there's times where I encounter athletes that don't even know that all that has to happen is the arrow shaft has to touch the next scoring ring to get that higher score. There's archers that don't even know that come to competitions,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, they think it has to be broken, or it has to be, you know, you have to, if the, for example, the process, and we can talk about rebuilding the line a little bit, we'll get into that, but they see that the line is gone, the arrow shaft, there's obvious space there. You can't see yellow. They just assume it's out because it's not touching the black line or that next color. And that's
right.
Not the case. And maybe that's what we'll kind of segue into that, but it's that understanding of that's not how the process works. So, and sort of sidebar for your information, I took my first judges seminar with Larry Wise at Lancaster Archery in person previous to COVID. And he made us go through that whole thing. He had like a whole had a bale set up with arrows stuck in it, all of these situations. And it was such a phenomenal seminar. I know it's everything's online now. I don't know how many in-person judge seminars happen anymore, but and you're absolutely right. There really should be some kind of a class, or maybe is there an online training available to archers to go over this stuff? There's not. Maybe there needs to be.
I don't think that there is. I was trying to do a little research to see if I could find any videos or anything online that kind of somebody has gone through and done. And I haven't seen that, but that's definitely something that we can entertain through the Officials and Rules Advisory Council with USA Archery, because that's,
Which you were a
we're
part of.
always not anymore.
Oh,
No.
okay. I thought you were.
No, as the national events manager, I can't serve in that role. So
Oh, okay. So you're the national events manager. I don't know if I realized that. Some changes have happened for sure. So
Yeah.
let's talk about that process of calling an arrow with those dynamics, the visualization side. So we talked about what angles look from. Let's talk about, where the judgment actually comes in. On your end as a judge, and what archers can implement before talking to a judge.
Okay. Well, I mean, obviously, before a judge is even called in, I'm hoping that archers are looking at the arrow from those two angles and taking a look to see if there is any possibility that any aspect, any piece of the shaft is touching the next scoring ring. Because if it is, it's in. It just is. That's the bottom line. When dividing lines are not intact or there's any displacement that happens, which happens often, and that a lot of the times has to do with what the materials are that the bale is made out of, especially indoor. I see it a lot. When they're layered foam bales, the arrow, when it goes in, can kind of shift and, go sideways. So the hole itself might actually be in the next scoring ring, but the shaft itself is not. And so that's something that archers need to understand too, because sometimes they think, well, I mean, the hole is clear. It's clear as day. It's touching, or it's in the, yellow or whatever. But it's actually where the shaft lies in the bale is how the wording is for the rule. So you have to pay attention to the shaft. Don't pay attention to the holes. But whenever there is any kind of a displacement, we have to try to visualize that imaginary circumference, right, of the circle. And so that's when that frontal view will come into play. But that is only after we look at both angles first, and then we will look at the frontal view if we need to rebuild that imaginary circumference. That one, it's always harder. It's not impossible to call arrows like that, but it's harder. And as judges, again, that's a lot of times benefit of the doubt goes to the archer in situations like that. And then judges will be pulling target faces and replacing them, usually, so that we don't encounter anymore. And that's it, really, that's for, preservation of the archer score. Like, we want to protect all the archers that are competing in a category. So, that's why we're changing target faces as frequently as we do, and why we have in USA Archery the rules, for indoor nationals, where target faces have to be changed every so many ends so that we can make sure that the archers are getting the scores that they've earned. So.
Yeah, no, that's a great explanation of how to do it and what to expect, and a way that you can implement, that what's already in place within the rules, so that you don't have to contact a judge per se, or at least you're getting a fair crack at every arrow and getting every point. I know, and maybe like you said, some people are just like, hey, we're there for fun. It is what it is. I trust my bail mates. Okay, and that's fine. And that's if you're good and content with that. That is good too, but there's like uber competitive people, or people who are pushing for national or world records, or so like they're kind of fighting and scratching for every single call, and rightfully so. They deserve it, so let's talk about let's also talk to other arrow scenarios. How about let's start with scenario number one, shot an extra arrow. What happens? You get down to the target, you see that that archer, and I guess let's just go with indoor, because although it happens on both and I have done it before, let's go with indoor. We're obviously bare bow is the primary topic for us, but this applies to all, because I will be posting this on both platforms. But let's say we're indoor archery, three arrow ends, but we shot a fourth arrow. What direction does that go?
Depends on the target base.
Okay. Let's talk to the target faces because everyone is shooting. Some people shoot three spots, some people shoot single. Let's get into it.
Okay, so on the single spot, it's really simple. Whenever you shoot more than the allowed arrows, you just score the lowest three or lowest six if you're outdoors. It's that simple. There is no penalty. That is not a penalty. We don't consider that a penalty. It's just the proper scoring method. So if an archer shoots four into a single spot, you just go down there. I myself like to turn the score sheet over, write all four arrow values down. Mark the three, put that on the scorecard, and just do the lowest three. Archers can do that on their own. They don't need a judge involved. All of them can agree on that, but sometimes they'll call over a judge because they don't know what the process is in that situation. When it comes to a triangle or a vertical three spot, that's different because we treat each spot on the target face as its own target face, essentially. And only one arrow can go in each one. So if an archer shoots four and there happens to be two arrows in one of those spots, then the lowest arrow value is the one that's taken. The other one is marked as a miss. Now you still have four arrow values. So you have to write those four arrow values down. And then it's the lowest three that get recorded on the scorecard. So you will inevitably have a miss because a miss is going to be one of the lower three arrow values. But it's not taking the highest arrow value, marking it a miss of those four. It's not done that way. The process is pretty specific. You have to do each individual face on the three spot. And then all four arrow values are out, taken from highest to lowest, and the lowest three are the ones that are recorded on the scorecard. Again, not a penalty. Super confusing for people. Penalties are things that are assessed after you go through that process. That would be for somebody that shot out of time, for example, or somebody that, if they're shooting teams or something, shot out of sequence if it was alternating, something like that. So.
I think we're really getting into alcohol, so we won't get into that right now. Maybe we can down the road. However, I think another aspect of arrow calls is also bounce outs, damaged arrows, or hanging arrows.
Yeah, so
They all
indoor we
go
see a
together.
lot of that. Yeah, we see a lot of that in indoor. Ideally, if you're shooting on your own target face, you're not interfering with other archers, not having to stop another archer when something like that happens. But on your own target face, if you have a hanging arrow, if you've had a bounce out, you need to stop shooting. That's the first thing. Judges do get involved in those situations. They will go down to the bail with the athlete and determine what the arrow value was. When it comes to bounce outs, because we're shooting on such a small target base in such a small area, bounce outs can actually happen because they've deflected off of another arrow, possibly a knock. And so, as judges, we're looking for evidence of where that arrow hit. And that's why we mark arrow holes, right? So, if there's an unmarked arrow hole, then it's easier to identify where that arrow value is. If there's not an unmarked arrow hole, then we look for evidence that there was a bounce out, and we look for a damaged knock possibly. That's happened. That happens quite a bit in indoor. And if that does exist, then the arrow value is the same as the one that it struck and bounced back. Hanging arrows scored the same. I mean, it's where the arrow shaft lies in the target face. It doesn't matter if it's hanging across four different scoring rings. It's wherever that, the point is where it's hanging from. That's where we score from. Pass-throughs, not common usually in indoor. I mean, I've never seen it in indoor. But pass-throughs are also one of those things that if you have an arrow embedded or a pass-through, a judge has to be the one that comes and calls that. So archers should never touch an arrow. They should never try to push an arrow back through. Pull it out, anything. They shouldn't touch anything until a judge comes over and assists with the call.
Yeah, and that's gonna be more for our compound, probably compound and outdoor target friends, like our 50-meter compound friends, because those shooters are gonna see the pass-throughs more often than a barebow or a recurve shooter.
It's also based off of condition of equipment.
Oh,
So it
sure.
depends on where you're shooting.
So you're saying, you see a pass-through, don't touch it, have a judge come and What is the process of a pass through? Because I know what I would probably do by my own common sense rule, but what is there a written process for how to judge that arrow that is a pass through? So you're looking at the target face. Let's talk outdoor archery. Six arrows. There's six arrows in the target. There's only five showing. How are you assessing that sixth arrow?
Yeah, so my experience with pass-throughs is that they're fairly obvious usually because they've torn usually an area of the target face, and so then you can kind of see. We can assess the backside of the bale as well, and to kind of determine where the soft spot is, like where it would likely have penetrated. But ideally, what we're looking for is the evidence.
Hey everyone, thanks for watching this episode with Christy and the whole arrow judging and arrow protocol and rules discussions. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider check out the links in all of our bios. The link is in the comments of this episode, both on YouTube and Spotify and all that. But you know, consider joining Patreon. There's a lot of exclusive material there. Anything that you basically consider taking a regular seminar, an online seminar, or the pre-recorded version, which is continually being updated and part of this podcast. So this podcast will be included in the seminar, but it's organized. And then also there's a full ruled explanation and discussion added to the seminar as well. So you're getting all that you need to know in the online pre-recorded seminar in regards to this, and we're just continuing to add to us. So consider if you join Patreon, that comes off the cost of the seminar, and you get exclusive content. You get to join these discussions and talk with the guests, and that's every episode. Patreon subscribers are all invited to the actual live feeds and get to chat with our guests and ask them personal questions. And you get access to people that ordinarily you don't get to talk to. And I think that's what's the coolest thing about it. But we have all kinds of ways to support Barrel Project and everything we're trying to accomplish. So you can do the buy a cup of coffee thing. You can go to the website, www.thebarrelproject.com, and check out the apparel store. That's all there through Fourth Wall. That's all the clothing options, t-shirts, sweatshirts, beanies, hats. I think there's sweatpants. There might be leggings, like yoga pants for women. There's all kinds of stuff there. So go check that out. Remember, like through the Patreon page, you have access to coaching there. You have access to all of the documents, the focus map, the training plans, the trying to think of what other documents I've uploaded there. The Barebow proficiency checklist. Like it's just I'm constantly adding tidbits and things to help Barebow archers just get better. So go check that out. And again, as we roll out of 2023 and roll into 2024, good luck with all of your archery goals and endeavors. We just hope that we get to meet all of you at some point throughout the year. And if we haven't been able to say hello and shake your hand, please introduce yourself, come up, say hey. With that being said, this is officially going to be the last episode of 2023. Thank you all so much for your support up to this point. I hope you continue to support the Barrel Project as we move forward in 2024.